We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven. I'm back from the cruise. Unfortunately, had to watch the last two games from the Chargers. Chargers coming up short again tonight on Sunday Night Football, 20-10 to the Baltimore Ravens. We'll dive into everything that happened tonight and everything that it means going forward. Joining me to do that is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How you doing?
Can I go on a cruise next? Can I skip
this? Yeah, go for it.
All right, see you guys.
Oh, man. I knew once the thing came around that Jason Garrett was calling the game that this was going to be a shit show, and that's what it turned out to be. For a little bit there, you know, I had a little bit of hope that the Chargers would be able to maybe get a win tonight in this kind of game. Maybe this is going to be a stereotypical Justin Herbert performance and the Chargers were going to get, you know, a big time win. And then Justin Herbert gets hit out of bounds. It doesn't get called. They call the penalty on Jamari Sawyer instead. And that really set the tone for the rest of the night. Everything just kind of felt like the offense was unable to get into a rhythm after that first drive. You get the three turnovers. I'm not really counting the interception because that was a Hail Mary. I don't think that should count. An Austin Eckler fumble, a Keenan Allen fumble, a Justin Herbert strip sack. It just felt like the story of the night, as much as people are going to want it to be about the head coach and the defense, it just felt like the offense was never able to get into a rhythm. It felt like the only thing that really was working has been the only thing that has been working, which is Keenan Allen. And he was mostly fantastic tonight outside of the fumble, but that was it. That was the whole offense, was Keenan Allen. Where is he? Where's he at? He even had the throwback to Austin Eckler, which is a really cool design for the first down. But outside of that, man, it's same old for this Chargers team. It felt like we have seen this story against the Cowboys, against the Chiefs. When the defense plays well, the offense struggles. When the offense plays well, the defense struggles. There's just no consistency. And tonight, the offense really, really struggled to get anything going. And the Baltimore Ravens are a great defense. They're arguably the best team in the AFC. But it just felt like they were, They were fish out of water basically after that first drive, pretty much, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess thankfully the refs weren't great for either team, so I can't just look at that one incident and go, well, that's where it happened. No, one, that's not why the Chargers lost, and two, it was pretty rough for both sides, so that's not a discussion, thankfully, although it was very frustrating, and I don't understand that whole sequence, and that really did kind of change the game, at least initially. I was hoping it would, you know, that fight, you know, Jamar getting penalized, that hit would galvanize the team in the same way that it did when the Chargers played the Raiders in week 4, when Jerry Tillery hit him out of bounds. But I guess Jerry Tillery inspires a different kind of emotion or something, and kind of scoring drive. But it's tough, man, because you hate to see the offense not put up points. You hate to see the offense struggle, but it's so difficult to figure out what the heck this offense wanted to do, or how it wanted to express itself, or what their plans were. If you have 3 drives that end in turnovers, and you know, you have another drive where I can't remember which one this was, but you know, Herbert's trying to I think it was the Eckler fumble. You know, but Herbert's trying to execute a 2-minute drill, but the defense has burned 2 timeouts already because of they can't substitute correctly. And so Herbert's having to rush things. They're having to rush things, and there's a fumble there. It's just tough, man. The defense finally, and I feel bad. I feel bad. Like, this is the primetime game. You know, this is the game that gets them to 4-7. This is, you know, everyone's going to be talking about the head coach, but I feel bad because the defense, his unit was not the reason that they lost. Although I do appreciate the Ravens getting away from what I thought they were doing very well at in the first half, and what the Packers and Lions were doing well against the Chargers, but whole different thing. Just frustrating. You know, it's same thing for Chargers fans. Spin the wheel, pick the thing, the reason that they lost. And it's just something, you know, sometimes it is a new thing, but it tends to hover around the same, you know, 6 things that not everything clicks in place. There's always a couple of pieces missing to the puzzle every single week, every single loss. So, you know, either way you spin it, look at this game, look at the whole season, look at after the bye, before the bye, whatever. It's just always something different. And it's frustrating to see that this offense, you know, again, it's very tough to tell what they were trying to do when you keep fumbling it in the first play or the first play of a drive, where you finally get a successful drive and you fumble it. Like, very tough to tell what they wanted to do, but it stinks that Kellen Moore has created an all-pro receiver in Keenan Allen, basically, and they've worked so well together. And then nothing after that seems to exist in any kind of intentional way. And again, but then again, though, it is tough to express your idea when obviously Mike Williams goes down, Josh Palmer's been out, then Quentin Johnson, granted, I don't think they had any real plan for him, but he misses the second half. So now you're trying to throw to Alex Erickson, and Herbert and him are off, you know, on a different page on a couple of throws tonight. So it's just, I don't know, man, frustrating. They're 4-7, and that's the season, man.
Yeah. As it currently stands, Chargers have a top 10 pick. This is trending towards I'm going to stop watching Chargers film and start watching draft prospect film in a minute here, which sucks. I don't like doing that. I enjoy watching Chargers film and watching and seeing who's shining in moments that maybe are darkest, but it's just the signs of a bad football team, and we need to be real about where this team is at. You can blame injuries, you can blame coaching, whatever the case may be. They're 4-7, and they have yet to find a consistent thing that they can rely on outside of like the same key players, outside of Herbert, Keenan Allen, Khalil Mack, and Tuli Tuipulotu, and the occasional Elohi Gilman turnover. They don't have guys that they can rely on. I thought that Dean Marlowe has been playing well, and then they bench him for Jalen Hawkins. You know, Iseng Bassey comes in, who is off of, you know, he was signed off the street a few weeks ago. You know, these personnel changes aren't really changing anything, that when you're just running the same kind of stuff. You know, the Ravens are going to sit there and RPO you to death if Dean Leonard's sitting 10 yards off the ball. And that doesn't matter if it's Michael Davis, it's JC Jackson, if it's Casey Hayward, like, you name the corner. If you're 10 yards off the ball, a team like the Ravens is just going to slant you and slant you and slant you, and they're going to move the ball at will. So it's just the same issues. They're like, you could tell they were trying to do certain things differently, but it just didn't matter, you know. And Kellen Moore, like you mentioned, Jason Garrett mentioned that Kellen wanted to run the football early and often and be able to try and keep the Ravens pass rush at bay. Well, then you start fumbling, you get behind, and the run game's not working, so you have to make some adjustments. And that's been the whole offensive game script for the entire season. You know, they're trying to get prime Austin Ekeler back, and it's just not working, you know. And so you have to pivot into let's throw the football as much as we can. Let's go into empty. Let's do this. Let's do that. And it's just not working. So the Chargers are 4-7. I assume they'll be able to beat a very, very bad Patriots team next week. But, you know, it's not going to do anything for this team. I think they're, technically speaking, their playoff odds today are like 5% after losing this game. They're last in the AFC West. They're 4-7.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we're at November 26th and the season is effectively over.
Yeah, I think we talked about it really being over in October, but still mathematically you got to get there. I think it's an 8% chance. At least that's how Sumer Sports has it. I think New York Times had it like 7.5% if they lost. So sure, there's under 10% chance that they could make it. Sure. But no, this is, I mean, Denver's playing like they're playing. The Ravens seem, not the Ravens, the Raiders seem, you know, excited and they're trying. So there's that. Someone pointed out in the chat, so I guess I'll bring it up. Brandon Silly said it was a coaching staff decision to bench Quentin Johnston, not medical staff. So Quentin Johnston was benched. I don't know what happened because he was obviously hurt on the play. And then he was in the medical tent and he left when Justin Herbert went in. So I don't know what there is, but yeah, Quentin Johnston on a night where they did not have wide receiver 2 or 3. And Jalen Guyton and Gerald Everett were questionable heading into the game. They had a coaching staff decision to bench Quentin Johnston in favor of, I'm assuming, Alex Erickson, who was off tonight and not on the same page as Justin Herbert, understandably so, because he just got here. But that's a pretty rough look for Quentin Johnston there to be benched in a game where you're missing 2.5 receivers.
That's a frustrating link. I have preached patience for Quentin Johnston this entire season, but if you can't play him over Alex Erickson, like that's wow. That I have no words. And on the same night that Zay Flowers scores 2 touchdowns and essentially ends the game, wow, that's tough, man. I'm speechless right now.
For all the issues that were Quentin Johnston's coming out of college, it's not like there weren't issues for the other receivers that were taken in the second round or the third round or the fourth round or the fifth round, but they've all found a way to, even just in their own way, produce, get something. You know, Jalen Hyatt today at 100 something yards, and everyone kind of ragged on him for being able to do only one thing well. Well, he had 100 something yards today doing that one thing well. I don't understand what it is with Quentin Johnston and their complete reluctance. It just felt like during camp, I understand why he's not wide receiver 3, but it felt like during camp they did a lot to open things up for him, maybe not necessarily on screens. And it just, as soon as week one hit, they just dialed everything back.
Yeah.
So there is, I hate to suggest it because we don't know, but there is something going on the practice field, in meeting rooms or something that we are obviously missing. Well, we're seeing some of the things on the field, right?
Yeah.
The drops being a notable one, but there's something else there, because when you're in, Alex Erickson's going to be out there in the second half in a must-win game against the Baltimore Ravens over you, and Jalen Guyton, who was questionable heading into this game, and those guys are out there over you. It's as bad as I can remember. Like, the Chargers have had first round picks who have not been good, who maybe have even been terrible. They were still out there, you know, whether by coach's decision or Dean Spanos or Tom Tulaska, who you name it, right? These guys are out there. They can't find, like, no one wants to get Quentin Johnston involved or on the field. It's baffling to me.
Yeah, that's the thing with Quentin, man. Like, certainly he's had some drops, but they've been using him as a primarily as a field stretcher, and that's not what he is. It's never been what he is. You know, I sit here and I generally watch almost every Chiefs game because I you know, they're always playing relevant games, I feel like. And, you know, I look at the way that they are using Rashee Rice, and to me, that's the way that Quentin Johnston should have been used from day one. You know, you watch him get screens, crossers, deep overs, everything for him is yards after the catch. And I'm sitting here watching Quentin Johnston, and he's running comeback routes, and he's running go routes, and he's running deep posts. And, like, that's just not who he is. Like, I don't understand the usage. I never have. Again, there are certainly other issues here in terms of the drops and things like that. You know, he could have caught, I think, at least two passes tonight, but you know, there was certainly a play where I thought could have been a pass interference. But again, there are issues on the field. We don't know what's happening off the field. You know, he was talking with Chris Rim and, you know, said that, you know, things were going to be different, that he felt like he was playing passive and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, like, they're far apart. Like, he is not doing his part, and the coaching staff is not doing their part either. Mm-hmm. Like, if they were using him the way that he should be used and he were still struggling, I think that's a different kind of story. But at the end of the day, if they don't trust him, and playing Alex Erickson over him is them telling everybody, we don't trust this guy in key moments, it's a bad look. No way around it. Quentin Johnston is going to have a very long offseason. He's going to have to figure out how to make plays that can show that he is a reliable playmaker, because if this is the rest of the rookie season, you know, his rookie season is essentially a non-factor, which is just, it's not necessarily a shock, but it is when there's no Mike Williams and no Josh Palmer either. So, mm-hmm. Quentin's going to have to figure it out, man. He's going to have to bust his ass all offseason long to be able to show that he can be a reliable playmaker in this league. Otherwise, it's going to, you know, he's going to get replaced pretty quick here.
The Chargers, Quentin Johnston, but many of the players, they got to figure out what the hell they want to be if you're not Justin Herbert or Keenan Allen being a veteran. These young guys got to figure out how to step up and be an NFL player and legit, like, be an enforcer, get that first down, make that catch. You know, Gerald Everett, right? The other veteran guy, he's the guy who understands how to do that. Keenan Allen understands how to do that. A lot of these guys, these young guys, just don't have it. And it just feels like the offense, it's a contagious thing where I don't know if they're just playing tight or scared or timid or at 80% because they're overthinking. But, you know, these are veteran guys who are doing this, but, you know, Keenan's fumble, Eckler's fumble, the offensive line just brain farting at different situations, guys not making catches, Quentin Johnston getting benched and him not performing well. Like, something's got to, they got to light a fire under these guys, man, because they're, I don't believe the offense is the reason the Chargers have been knocked out of the postseason, essentially, but they have played their part significantly in many moments. Generally, outside of, you know, Justin Herbert sits in his own little pocket dimension for the most part. Generally, it's everybody else. And they got to figure out how to galvanize themselves, how to find some sort of fire in themselves to be what they are supposed to be. You know, Zion Johnson, what is happening? Yeah. You know, Jamari Sellier gets kind of a pass, you know, playing a lot of tackle last year, switching sides, you know, playing between Will Clapp, Trey Pipkins, not easy, but. What happened to Trey? What happened to Zion? What's going on with Quentin? It's just, I don't know, man. It's frustrating. I don't know what happened to some of these players, and I don't understand what's going on with Quentin Johnston.
Yeah, there's some of the player issues are explainable, right? Like, Austin Eckler is a 30-year-old running back who is very clearly past his prime. Like, that's... I wish the Chargers would make the adjustment, and like we've been talking about, the need to give Joshua Kelly more touches all season long. And Austin Eckler, they're still treating him like this is 2021 Austin Eckler, and that's just not the case. So that's the explainable one. You know, the stuff with Zion and Jamari and Trey Pipkins in particular, like, I don't understand what it is. You know, Duke Mannweather was asked about it, and he said the whole unit has regressed. Like, it's not just one guy. And that's, you know, I felt like this group could have been a top 10, top five unit in the league. And then Corey Lindsey gets injured. Zion is if anything, has taken a step back from last season. Trey Pipkins has taken probably a couple steps back from last season. And the thing is that Kellen Moore and this coaching staff have not adjusted to this reality of the offensive line and what they're struggling with. Their go-to stuff has always been, let's get into empty. Let's give Justin the reads. Let's give him the answers, and let's try and get the ball out quick. Well, if teams are going to double team Keenan Allen, like they have been, like John Harbaugh said at halftime show, he's like, we're double teaming him and he's still getting open. When that's happening, you have to make an adjustment, max protect, run the football, screen game, whatever the case may be. You can't just keep doing the same old stuff. And that's what Kellen has done. You know, at the end of the game on the second to last drive, they get into an empty package and they keep Austin Ekeler in on the right side. But then pressure comes off the left side and it's free rusher. And you look at the other side and Will Clapp and Jamari are blocking one person and Trey and Ekeler are blocking one person. And it's a free rusher right away on fourth down. It was a great call objectively from Mike McDonald, but protection plans have been a massive issue for this team all season long. And especially in these key moments, it always feels like they get into a third and long situation late in games and they can't even get the ball off. And for whatever you might think of Joe Lombardi and that crew, they were always able to draw up a nice protection plan. And Justin Herbert was always able to get third and fourth downs off. Obviously, some of that was to the detriment of the team because they were always in third and fourth downs. But this coaching regime has not been able to figure out how to get these third and long situations off in clutch situations. It always feels like Justin is getting sacked. And tonight was no different.
Yeah, it is the other side of the coin, right? But we reminisce about the Shane Steichen days. We sometimes forget about the hits that Herbert took and how many pressures there were. I feel like we're sort of seeing some of the same, albeit a different Keenan Allen usage. But yeah, the lack of any adjustment is a surprise. And this whole, the Austin Ekeler first down run thing, drive starter thing in particular, needs to go. I get why you're trying to run on first down, because you're trying to run on first down in the off chance that you throw an incompletion on second down or something happens on second down so you don't end up in third and 10. But you're only getting to second and 9, second and 8 in most situations. You know, Ekeler typically these days gets like one 13-yard run in there, you know, so it kind of changes and slightly inflates the total, but it's you cannot be looking at what's going on and the what was it, 13 mile an hour run to the outside against the Packers.
It was 13 miles per hour,
wasn't it?
I didn't have internet the whole week. I don't know if that's true. That's terrible.
I thought you had okay, yeah, so they had tracked Trey Pipkins as running faster, I believe, on that specific play than Ekeler was on that one big run to the outside against the Packers. And I believe it was 13 miles per hour. Wow. It is just, it's no longer what it is. He's no longer who he is. Everyone's saying it is 13 miles an hour.
Jesus.
I don't know. Kellen Moore, I like 50% of it. But the other 50%, and worse, the regression among the offensive line and a blocking unit that should be much better than this is very concerning. And in my opinion, as much as continuity is important, and I will keep that in mind, I don't believe Kellen Moore has earned the right to be a head coaching candidate for any team this season based on the past few games that we've seen. I do believe there's a lot positive there. It is very tough to have your job, you know, be successful when you're missing so many players and your first rounder is getting benched for non-medical reasons. But at the same time, The adjustment for the rest of the roster has not been there. And you can't pitch yourself as a head coach off of Herbert throws it to Chargers all-time receiver Keenan Allen and it works really well. It's been working very well, but that's not enough.
Yeah, I think with Kellen, like, you know, it can't be discounted that he was with Dak for so long. And like, there is an aspect of play calling where you need to be able to have that kind of relationship with your quarterback. And Kellen in year one just doesn't have that. And they've had so many other things go wrong, like losing Mike Williams, who was obviously a huge piece of the plan going into the season. You lose Josh Palmer, you know, you lose Corey Linsley, like all of these other things. And I still think that Kellen Moore is a high-end offensive coordinator, non-head coach edition. When you're talking about these player callers who are true offensive coordinators and not head coaches, I still think he is up there. But the bones of his offense are very sound, in my opinion. But it's very difficult for me to really trust him as like a head coaching candidate when there haven't been these kind of adjustments. You know, I watched so many games of the Cowboys last season and beyond that. And in the summer, one of the things I wanted to do was go back and look at what did the offense look like when he had Cooper Rush playing quarterback? What did the offense look like when he had Andy Dalton playing quarterback? And it was a lot more simplified. It was a lot more like, let's just get our key playmakers, key touches. And that's what it feels like right now. It feels like he's just trying to get the offense going through Keenan. And I totally understand that. But there's not been a lot of adjustments throughout the season. You know, I go back and watch the games with Cooper Rush, and there's a lot of six-man offensive line packages. There's a lot of three tight end looks. There's a lot of other things like that. Granted, he was able to run the football pretty effectively with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, and this team cannot run the football. But him as a head coaching candidate, I'm not there. I think some desperate team, maybe like the Carolina Panthers, might make him a head coaching offer. We'll see. But to me, I would like to see Kellen, you know, be the offensive coordinator with Justin again and be able to try and get that chemistry going. But as head coaching candidate, I'm not there for him right now.
Yeah, I don't want to discount what happened the last 2 weeks where you did see Justin Herbert take more control of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Start to see even more like an emotional side of Justin Herbert, him running more. Obviously, we saw that tonight again, another great run from him. So those things, the most important person is Justin Herbert. So if Kellen Moore is empowering Justin Herbert, you keep Kellen Moore around because that is your engine. So you get him to continue to develop and be the quarterback. But man, like, I'm glad that he's maxing out the quarterback and Keenan, but everything else just
honestly, needs some work for sure.
It needs some work. I wish we had seen even 7 games with Mike Williams and Josh Palmer just to see like, okay, what is the vision for this offense? And Corey Linsley, obviously, we didn't even get to see what the vision was. Almost right against Minnesota, 215 yards for Keenan, 150 yards for Mike Williams or whatever it was. You know, Josh Palmer catches the game-winning touchdown. You know, it's just a real bummer. But yeah, no, Kellen Moore, I defend him, of course, the last couple of weeks because guys drop touchdown passes. That's not on you. What are you supposed to do? But today was frustrating. And in these games against, you know, in the same sort of way, the defense struggles more when they're not playing Zach Wilson, they're not playing some of these other guys. Kellen Moore has now struggled to find consistent answers when they're facing the Chiefs, when they're facing the Cowboys, when they're facing the Ravens. Yeah. And I don't know how it's going to go against Foxborough next week.
Yeah, and for all of their issues, the Patriots still defensively are still, you know, hanging on there, not to the same level as they're used to. But, you know, when you're evaluating a guy like Kellen Moore from like a head coaching candidate perspective, like, a lot of it is, okay, like, how do you measure up against the top units, right? Like, the whole thing that Mike McDonald is going to have as a head coaching candidate is look at what he has done to these high-end quarterbacks, and the Ravens did it again tonight. And they are a fantastic defense. You know, they're trotting out Kyle Van Noy and Jadeveon Clowney as their top edge rushers, and they're still a top three unit in the league right now. So Mike McDonald has that. You know, you look at the edge that Steve Spagnuolo gives the Chiefs right now. Every time they play a top-end quarterback, the Chiefs make it so hard on them, and that's how the Chiefs are winning games right now. You know, Lou Anarumo is having a bit of a tough year this season, but previously, like what he did against elite quarterbacks is why he was earning such a following amongst, you know, Twitter people, and why he was earning that kind of reputation was his work against top end quarterbacks. So Kellen right now, and what he's struggling with is these elite defenses are giving him a lot of problems, because I think he's sticking to what he knows. He's sticking to what is comfortable, and it's not working. So absolutely, Kellen Moore deserves blame for what is happening right now. You know, you can put the fumbles aside here. It definitely is, you know, a struggle to get everything going like that. But Kellen has not adjusted his plan all that much outside of feed Keenan Allen as much as possible. And that's a big reason why you struggle against these defenses, because, you know, you can take that away or you can take the other things away, and it just makes things so difficult. So, you know, Kellen Moore definitely deserves criticism. I think Justin Herbert deserves a little bit of criticism, not a ton tonight, but you know, I thought for the most part, Justin played pretty well, but you know, this is, it's frustrating to see. Again, defense plays well, offense struggles. It's been kind of the story of the Chargers season this year.
In talking about this team's identity and the inability to, you know, step up in these moments, I just, comment from Brandon Staley in his press conference. This is from Alex. I haven't listened to the press conference, so if it's paraphrased the wrong way, I apologize. But from Alex, he says, Brandon Staley says he thinks his messaging is getting across to his team because they'd get, quote, blown out of the stadium, end quote, if it wasn't. And to me, that's just like, well, at least we're not losing badly. You know? And like,
yeah. We're still losing, like, but we're almost winning.
Right. You take on the identity of your coach, for better or worse, sometimes. And it just feels like, you know, we just talked about this team not being able to come up in these situations, for the defense to just not quite, you know, make that play. You know, the line, I just can't protect it in this one moment. I just can't catch that football. When you hear messaging like that, and again, I want to say this acknowledging that I've not heard it in context in the press conference, but when you say that, well, you know, well, we didn't get blown out of the stadium, are we building a statue for that? Is that going to be erected in the middle of Rivers Lake? You know, didn't get blown out of the stadium. Will I take a selfie with that statue next time I'm at SoFi? It just, the Chargers are still the Chargers, and they are the team that we've always been rooting for, you know, more successful in some years than others and worse in some years than years like this. But yeah, it's frustrating. And I don't know why 806 of you are here live right now at 9:20. I appreciate you, but I'm mostly at a loss for words, and I have a slight sniffle, so
yeah, that time of year. I think most of the people in this chat obviously share the frustration. You know, this is the last year of Justin Herbert's cheap years, and you know, the team is 4-7. You know, we're talking about the season being over in November, and it's just really frustrating, man. And for whatever you think about the Chargers roster right now, I think the hope in the offseason maybe wasn't necessarily that this team would be an elite team, but at least it would be a playoff team. And right now they're out. Like, I know technically speaking, they're not at 0%, but this team is done for the season. And it's really frustrating. I watch a lot of these primetime games at my in-laws' house, and my in-laws always are like, how are you a Chargers fan? Like, how do you put up with this? And it's just over and over again. The losses are all the same, man. And, you know, there's some things that this team can like tweak and things like that. But, you know, a lot of the same issues have been the issue for over the last three seasons.
Mm-hmm. Let me, just wanted to pull up. We'll talk about this on the Chargers channel too, but just wanted to pull up the Chargers drafts, and I'm sorry, it's very tough for some of you to see this, but like, who are your building blocks? You need to talk about the Chargers.
Ooh, we're talking about that right now. Okay.
All right. Yeah, we'll address it more, you know, on the Chargers channel, I believe. But just going through it, when the season basically ends, you're now looking ahead to the next one and trying to determine what is your building block moving forward that you feel any bit of confidence in.
Yeah.
I'd say two players in three classes.
So you're talking about Thule and
Rashawn.
Rashawn.
Palmer, it depends how you feel about building block used there. I do believe he'll be a significant contributor. He looked good. But in terms of draft class, you know, they felt like in 2022 they took more of projects, I think, because of their messaging this year when they said they took more of, you know, ready to go any of NFL players. I mean, which is something. This ain't it, man. This group, I mean, you can obviously go back another class, but there are most of them are about to be free agents except for the quarterback, and I feel like that's a solid building block. But
I mean, sorry, going through the list.
Oh.
Yeah, man. It's I mean, one of our biggest frustrations has always been like when they do get like solid players, they don't re-sign them, right? You know, and some of that is going to continue this year. Like, I think Alohi Gilman is objectively a solid player. I don't see him coming back. Like, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of everything. But, you know, I think objectively you look at this, like the last three draft classes, obviously we know that Justin Herbert is a building block. He is the building block. But yeah, basically you have Rashawn and you have Thule, maybe Josh Palmer. I mean, Asante has taken a pretty big step back this year. People last year were talking about him as the best cornerback on the team, but that was never really true, in my opinion.
I guess he is now.
Maybe Zion turns it around. I don't know. It's a lot of maybes. Yeah, what are you drinking?
People are asking about the cream soda. So
vanilla cream soda. There we go.
I can't drink alcohol. I'm allergic to it. I would pass out because of the allergic part, not because of the alcohol part.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
No, the one who drinks on the show is Alex.
Yes.
But yeah, man, it's frustrating right now. Like, I think, you know, this is like, you need to play Deion Henley. Like, you need to play these younger guys. Like, I'm glad they're giving Dean Leonard a shot. Maybe he turns into something. You know, he had a good game against the Lions, not so good game tonight. Again, granted, they are not doing him any favors schematically right now. But all these young guys need time. Like, I don't really care that you don't trust Quentin Johnston. You have to play him. I'm not watching the rest of this season with Alex Erickson and the ghost of Jalen Guyton. You have to play Quentin. He needs the reps. You have to play Darius Davis. He needs the reps. You have to play Joshua Kelly. He needs the reps. You can't keep playing these older players. You're 4-7. I'm sorry. Like, you need to pivot to the young players. This needs to be, this needs to become young player time. Maybe Jalen Hawkins is something. I don't know. Find out. You have nothing to lose right now. And it's just like Otito Ogbonia, give him all the reps. Scott Matlock, give him the reps. Everybody who is young needs to play every single rep that they possibly can right now, because that's where you're at right now. You're 4-7. You're last in the AFC West. I don't care about Alex Erickson. All due respect to Alex Erickson. Like, you've got to play your young guys.
What do you say fuck me for? Or Alex Erickson's like, hey, what the hell, man?
He had a nice catch tonight, man. But
yeah, he did.
You got to play the young guys. Like, I'm sorry. There's no investment into Alex Erickson.
Yeah, no, I understand. You're right, though. You have no choice. Okay, let's scroll through like the decisions, right? Okay, so let's not play Isaiah Spiller or Elijah Dotson. Congratulations, your two other running backs had 3.2 and 2.7 yards per carry.
Yeah.
And it sure felt like it. It actually felt worse, in my opinion. I can't believe there are 3.2 yards per carry for Eckler. You know, you're not playing Quentin Johnston. Granted, you were. And Erickson has 17 yards. Again, all respect. But your quarterback's not even on the same page with him twice. I can't believe they didn't call intentional grounding on either of those, given the ones we had saw the previous week with like the Bills and those miscommunications leading to intentional grounding. What else we got here? I don't know how you play Otito more than, although I don't know. I don't know, dude. They're not going to play the younger guys. They're not going to, other than the secondary, which is the only group that they don't give a shit about. Like secondary, it's like, I don't care. New people every week, who cares? And it's not working, but at least they're, you know, moving guys around. Otherwise, it's the same thing we always hear. Favoritism. Yeah. And listen, the guys that are paid mostly do play. Like that's not unlike most teams in the NFL. But I don't see a path where they can, in any smart way to themselves, justify playing Deion Henley over Kenneth Murray or Eric Kendricks. First of all, I don't know which one you pick. Could be either.
Doesn't matter.
I agree. and I respect what Kenneth Murray has done taking a step forward this season. But yeah, you do have to try to find out. Heck, I'm open to it. Like, honestly, I was open to Nick Niemann getting out there. It's not like it was bad when he was playing, and give him a shot.
Yeah.
You know, and if you get some plus in the pass game, or, you know, go get Drew Tranquil back, but that's a whole other topic. I don't know, man. They're not. I agree. We were going to talk on the Chargers show about if the Chargers lost, what do you do moving forward? But I was sitting here staring at a blinking cursor because what am I supposed to say? Play Isaiah Spiller more? They're not playing him. Let's play, I don't know, let's throw to Quentin Johnson occasionally. They're not doing it. Yeah. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's just we're at that point right now. Like, I hate it. Like, I covered the 2019 team. We covered the 2020 team. At least the 2020 team had the young guys. Like, it was fun to watch the young guys. Right now, it's just not fun to watch this team, like, objectively speaking. You have four players who are playing well. You have a bunch of other moving parts, coaching issues, things like that. Give me the player development stuff. I need something to, like, latch on to right now. And outside of those four guys, I'm just not sure what else there is. So, yeah, you got to get some player development going. Like, just see what happens. You never know.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, Chargers fans, make Little Caesars, the official pizza sponsor of the NFL, part of your game day experience this Sunday. We all know how well football and pizza go together. It's just like Keenan and Allen, Justin Herbert on game day. Make sure you order online during our pizza pregame 1 hour before and 3 hours after NFL kickoffs, plus all day Sunday, and get ready for some football and fun. Choose your favorite Little Caesars pizza or pick the toppings you crave. Either way, you win. My personal favorite is the pepperoni and green pepper combination with the dynamite crazy bread with the dipping sauce. It's my favorite game day experience to go to for food on Sunday afternoons. Speaking of winning, everyone scores with convenient delivery or in-store pizza porta pickup. So grab some friends and enjoy a few slices during game day. Bolt up.
Hey, it's Tyler from the Guilty as Charged podcast, and I'm here to talk about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a skill-based, real-money daily fantasy sports game. How does it work? You pick 2 to 6 players, and if they will go more or less than their Prize Picks projection. Watch your progress update in real time, win up to 25 times your entry amount, and cash out your winnings with quick scoring, settling, and withdrawals. Prize Picks offers frequent discounts, bonuses, and other exciting offers. Players can enjoy community-wide promotions, including weekly promotions like Taco Tuesday and Flex Friday. I've loved using Prize Picks so far. This week, I've got Justin Herbert with more than 284.5 passing yards and Keenan Allen with more than 82.5 receiving yards. To make your selections, go to prizepicks.com/guilty and use code GUILTY for our first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/guilty and use code GUILTY for a first deposit match up to $100.
Should we get to some of these super chats?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. I feel like
we need some direction. We appreciate you guys. Still 800 people in here. We love you guys. Love the support.
Paths, thank you. I'll drink my cream soda to you.
Yeah, I'll have some water. I can't have sugar like this late at night. I feel so old saying that, but like, I can't have sugar past like 8 p.m. or I like do not sleep. It just, I don't know what it is, but anyways.
I'm just trying to die early, so.
Make the transition. He says it's late going to bed. All I'm gonna say, O-line has been a problem for over 10 years now. I mean, the last 2 years before this year, the offensive line was good. They were at least like borderline top 10. They certainly have regressed in a bad way this year. So, you know, I think we'll see what happens with Corey Linsley's health going forward, you know, but there's gonna have to be some things figured out, and I think new offensive line coaching staff is probably needed at this point as well.
Yeah, I am. This is a different conversation, touchy conversation. The one, again, this the bar is easier when you have Justin Herbert, but the only coach Kellen Moore has been able to work with that he's worked with before is Doug Nussmeier, and I do feel like Kellen Moore has taken a nice step forward. So I am curious what it would look, what it would have looked like with the guys that he has worked with before. It's a surprise. And now the Duke Manyweather thing, while I still believe that is the best training you're gonna get, it no longer has the same shine, right? But again, you look at all these offensive linemen, they're all just taking a step back. So like, it's not Duke's fault that Zion is regressing this year. They didn't work together.
No. Tara, appreciate Tara. She says, first off, thank you for being our therapist and thank you for all your hard work. You're welcome. We appreciate people like Tara supporting the show as always. She says, second off, what is the bigger issue for the run game? Lack of OL protection or RBs aren't good enough. And then third, she says, bolt up. What do you make of the run game issues? We talked a lot about like tight end stuff, and that was like the biggest issue in my opinion. I still think it's an issue, but what do you make of the way that they ran the football tonight?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and look, because I felt like even though I didn't love the results, I kind of saw what they were going for a bit early on. I thought it was like, okay, Kelly for 3, Eckler for 2. But they were just kind of downhill. I'm like, okay, like I kind of get what you're trying to do. Let's not waste time. Let's go. But I don't know, man. This whole Tara's asking about offensive line protection, running backs. It's everything, man. It's the tight ends we knew that they needed that they tried to maybe look into, but nothing materialized until it was too late. And then the one guy they finally added to the roster was Nick Bennett, who had a concussion. I don't know. I feel like with the run game, the offensive line is the least of my issues. When I watch them in general, it's like, okay, 1-to-1, I think it works out just fine. And frankly, I do think that is what Zion does better. And I think that Jamari does better, what Trey does better. So I don't know. It was typically tight ends, and they just have no juice at running back right now. It's why that when they drafted Isaiah Spiller, and we heard it in the comment section, we're like, dude, they need to go get someone with any kind of juice. I wish they had gotten anybody with any kind of speed. Does it always translate? Not necessarily. Did I love Jerome Ford, the running back? No. But would that have helped? No. any Cleveland back would have been successful. And so he's successful in Cleveland because they just have a scheme that's rock solid.
Yeah.
But they needed something like that. Heck, Pierre Strong, I don't know. In that class, they could have had somebody else. Rashad White, I don't think he's much of a runner, although I think he had 100 yards today. But as a receiver and in terms of like RAS, there's spark there. He has like 100 more yards over expected as a receiver than the next running back in like second place or whatever. Like that is missing in this group. They need. Now, again, I feel like you should lean into Joshua Kelly for some of those things because he's your most athletic back and, you know, younger significantly with less mileage than Austin Eckler. I don't know, man. They need to find some youth and some dynamicness to their group here.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a general football conversation to be had here. Like a lot of people, whenever we talk about like Chargers running backs, like people still like will bring up like, oh, they need a bigger physical back. Like, I don't think that's a thing in today's NFL, to be honest with you. Like if you watch tonight's game, the Ravens have a very large back who weighs 238 pounds and a very small back who weighs 190 pounds. One who weighs 190 pounds was gave them way more problems than the back who weighed 238 pounds. Mm-hmm. So, like, to me, vision and explosiveness are the two most important attributes for running backs in today's NFL. You have to be able to create yards when your offensive line cannot create them for you, which is the majority of the league. Most of the league does not have the Eagles offensive line or the Chiefs offensive line or the Cowboys offensive line. Most of the league has a pretty average run blocking experience in front of them. So you have to be able to create yards after contact. You have to be able to create explosive opportunities when you have them. You have to be able to make people miss. Those are the important things. And right now, that's not really Austin Eckler's game. I mean, we just talked about his run that went 13 miles per hour, which really was like the longest run of since like week one for him. So like some of it is the running backs. Some of it is the offensive line. Some of it is the scheme. Some of it's still a tight end play. Like the tight end play is still an issue. Like they're still asking Stone Smart to block. They're still asking Donald Parham to block. And those guys have struggled with that role. So it's a lot of everything. Like the everything in the run game should probably have been revamped last year. Mm-hmm. And the thought process was, it's a scheme issue. Let's get Kellen Moore in here and everything will be fixed. And that hasn't happened. Like the bones of it look good. Like I watched the tape and I'm like, oh, like that looks good if you have a better tight end here. Or like, oh, that looks good if Austin Eckler can make that one guy miss. But it's just everything is kind of struggling right now, which is where we were at last year. It just looks cleaner now than under Joe Lombardi.
Yeah. Still didn't expect it to be this bad though.
Me neither. I mean, especially after like they were so good in the preseason, I was like, okay, like this is going to be a legit thing this year. Like if you can get rushing yards like that in the preseason with your backups like Austin Pleasance and Foster Sorrell are out there and Brendan Hymus is out there, like, okay, then with your starters, you should be good. And it hasn't come to fruition. And you know, a lot of it is, you know, just blocking personnel, but it's not all of it. Some of it is scheme. Some of it is the running backs. And it's frustrating that this is still a problem.
Well, you know, who wasn't playing in the preseason, and I thought I placed all the blame on him, but Austin Eckler was not playing in the preseason. It was your younger, I guess, I don't know if more explosive is the right way to say it, when Spiller runs like a 4-5. but he did have a 70-yarder called back, so who knows?
Yeah. Let's see what Elijah Dotson has, man. You never know. Mm-hmm. Nick S. Cam has asked a lot more of this line, and it exposed them. Struggles as a play caller have gotten worse as he continues to lose weapons. Do you agree with Nick S.?
Ask more of this line. I think so. I feel like they're more on an island. I had a point I want to make about the second part of it. I forgot what I was going to say. Steven, you go.
Kellen Moore does ask more of his offensive linemen. This is true. They do a lot more empty packages than Joe Lombardi ever did. And that's a way that him and Justin Herbert have said that they like getting into these situations because it gives Justin Herbert the answers to what the defense is doing faster. But at the same time, like the players have their execution is also off. Like Trey Pipkins is having struggles that I didn't really see last year, and he was battling through like a sprained MCL for half the season. you know, Zion Johnson and Jamari are both kind of struggling with timing and launch points. And that, I mean, different positions, different spots, things like that. So yes, they're asked to do more, but they're also just kind of struggling with the execution aspect of things too. I mean, Justin Madubuike like ate Zion's lunch on two or three occasions tonight, and Madubuike has 11 sacks right now. Like, he's a great player, but for somebody like Zion, who was drafted in the first round, like, you expect him to be able to hold up against guys like Justin Madubuike. That's why you draft him in the first round.
Yeah, the part that's surprising to me for Zion too, one, the intelligence part, because he's a very smart person. We knew that heading into it. This guy was like the engineer.
Yeah.
You know, a very smart guy. And the other aspect is, I'm just surprised how often he's losing just physically for someone who is so athletic and was so, like, he tested off the charts, you know, one of the most athletic players you could have taken in that entire class. And so to see him both not put it together mentally and then just not be able to just even just do the physical part sometimes is a surprise. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I know, like, there's a lot of opinions about Zion out there and like what happened last season and what he's doing this season. I think the frustrating part for me is last year, a lot of the losses were what Jamari is kind of struggling with right now, which is the constant stream of like stunts and twists and things like that. You know, Zion last year was playing next to Trey, next to Storm, next to Foster. Corey was out for a little bit. There were a lot of moving parts. So like, you can understand why Zion would kind of struggle with a lot of the communication aspects of things. This year, I don't feel like he's, I feel like he has that under wraps. Like, him and Rashawn very rarely get beat on a stunt. You know, same thing with him and Will Clapp. I think him and Will Clapp have a pretty good, you know, working relationship. But a lot of Zion stuff has just been one-on-one stuff. And, you know, short, like, again, Justin Madubuike is a great player. You know, Chris Jones is a great player. Like, he's gone up against some great players, but like, he's losing in ways he wasn't losing last year, which is the concern for me. And so, again, he's somebody in the offseason, like, he's going to have to get after it, and he's going to have to come back strong next year, because I think it is fair to say that he has regressed. That doesn't mean you cut him. That doesn't mean he's a bum, but he's got to figure it out, and I think he can still get there, but it's tough right now.
Yeah.
Shun family showing out, as always. Another offensive line question from your dad. How do they get the O-line to protect Herbert in the fourth so we can finally get a game-winning drive? I think, like, at this point, I would probably just have one of the tight ends stay in and just have six-man protections going out as much as possible. Chip a defensive end. Like, these are things that you just have to keep in. Like, I think having a tight end chip just allows you to keep everything kind of set. Yeah. But it's tough it's third and 18 or whatever that last play was. Like, it's tough to have a chip in there. Like, you said, at some point, you got to trust your offensive line to get it done. But again, this is an adjustment that I've been asking for Kellen Moore, is having more six man protections, and it hasn't happened to this point.
Yeah. I don't have to. So I have to really watch now. I have to watch blocking.
It's fun. It's the best kind of film.
Not when it's bad.
Fair. Andrew Banky, why didn't we try to get Hunt? He was a free agent. I think if you know much,
he kicked about a woman in a hotel.
Yes, that is not somebody the Chargers ever sign. Dane Cannon, I appreciate the super chat here. I don't know enough about GM candidates right now, and I think it's probably too early to say that right now.
I told him to ask another one. So if you want to go with this one.
Okay, cool. Listen, man, they're top 10. I want Brock Bowers on this team ASAP. And frankly, I would take him on the team right now. Like, get him off of Georgia, get him on the Chargers. and that's not just a tight end thing. Like, it is a Brock Bowers thing. Like, I think he could just be such a huge help for this team. The issue with like the top 10 right now is it's quarterbacks and offensive tackles and Marvin Harrison Jr. So I think Brock Bowers would be awesome. If you're talking about like pure position need, like for me, position need is cornerback, but I don't think there's a cornerback in the first round in the top 10 that merits that. So if you're in the top 10, go get Brock Bowers. If you're in the top 15, take a corner, get that spot right, because that's your long-term asset that you don't really have right now, is you don't really have any quality long-term cornerbacks on the roster.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because do you take Bowers, who at that point is probably the best player available in terms of grade, or a corner? Jeez. So you either have a second. Now, you could do mercenary free agents, right? That's not the worst thing. You know, Zont is one of your corners next year. Dean is probably your third corner. And I guess Jock could potentially be your slot in year three. I don't know, man. Yeah, in terms of pure position need, it's corner. We'll see how the year ends. Did the Eagles, I can't believe I'm asking this question, after they took Rager, how long did it take them to then go get Smith?
Oh, it was like the next year, if I'm not mistaken.
That's kind of the point I'm getting at. You know what I mean? I asked the evil question.
Okay, so they took Jalen Rager in 2020, and they took Devontae Smith in 2021.
Well, we're currently headed towards that direction. But now, like last year, this draft class is probably very deep at receiver. It sounds like it's a very good receiver class.
Every year.
Which again makes it spiffy that they took a receiver in round one this year. You don't have to take one in the first round this year. Probably not at 9.
Well, I mean, like, you'll have Keenan next year. You'll have Palmer next year. You'll have Quentin next year. They're not going to be high enough to take Marvin Harrison. I know that for a fact, because he is going top 3, and the Chargers will not be taking. They will not be picking in the top 3. I'm pretty confident about that.
Wait, hold on. Let me check. What is it? Okay, so Chicago at 3 wins is at 4th. Oh well, sorry, their actual pick.
Yeah,
not the Carolina pick. Which, God, that couldn't have not gone worse for them.
Yeah, imagine being the Panthers right now. But, like, I'm pretty confident that the top 4 is going to be the Bears, courtesy of the Panthers, mm-hmm. the Giants, the Patriots, which is lovely that the Patriots, after everything that they've been through, have one bad season, and they're going to get fucking Caleb Williams or Drake May. I love it. It's so cool. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then 4th is probably the Bears again because of their own pick. It's going to be really tough for any team to get into the top 4 out of those teams. And then you also have the Cardinals, stuff like that. If they took a receiver, I wouldn't hate that. Like, I think you take chances and you throw more weapons at Justin Herbert when he's expensive. I think that's a sound philosophy. I personally would prefer Brock Bowers over any of the other receivers outside of Marvin Harrison. Mm-hmm. I haven't done like any draft grades right now, but I think Brock Bowers is like a generational weapon, and getting that man next with Justin Herbert would be fantastic. So if that's the plan, great. If you're picking in the top 15, you probably go with the position value and take a corner.
Yeah. And then at some point we do have to talk about center, but yeah. Which if they win some games and get into that late teens area, I don't know the class, but if there's a Linderbaum the same way the Ravens got him, about that same range, like I would understand.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a super strong center class. Like, of course you can find one.
Yeah.
But assuming Corey is not back, I think you're probably signing like a cheap veteran and maybe taking like a third or fourth round pick on one and just kind of like seeing what happened. Similar vein to like what the Jets did this year with Joe Tippmann and I forget who they actually signed. What was the center's name? I forget.
The Jets?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I don't remember.
I think that from a center perspective, you could also get away with like a cheap veteran and bring back Will Clapp if you wanted to be the backup again. Like, I do think Will Clapp has played pretty solidly, actually. But yeah, I think for me, it's another weapon in the first round, or you're taking a corner because you don't have one right now.
Yeah.
Great.
So I love that we're talking about draft stuff in November.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. What are the Chargers at right now? Did you look at that? They're ninth? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ninth is probably too far down to get Bowers, but this is a great offensive tackle class. You know, there's a few legitimately like top tier offensive tackles, it sounds like. You have obviously the two quarterbacks, maybe a third quarterback kind of emerges right now, maybe a fourth.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. But it does kind of seem like the Chargers are going to be kind of in that 10 to 14 range, if I had to guess right now, picks wise.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's so much fun. All right, you guys.
Sorry, I got one more.
Why didn't they go for Bryce Callen once it was clear you needed help in the secondary? I wish I could answer that question, because Bryce would solve a lot of their issues right now.
You mean good slot corner from last year should have been brought back to be good slot corner this year? I mean, look, maybe the whole freaking unit would have regressed, but...
Especially when good slot corner is literally still available.
Trotting out East St. Basie, though, baby.
Yeah.
That was worth... What is the cost difference between Basie and Callahan at this point in terms of...
It's for the rest of the season?
Negligible.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand, like... I understand why you wouldn't want to bring him back if Asante was your answer at slot corner. Because that was like the whole thing that they were like spinning in the offseason, was that Asante was going to move to the slot. And then that didn't happen after one game.
Mm-hmm.
So after one game, when you're like, oh, Asante's on a slot corner, you should have went back to Bryce and be like, hey, let's go, come back.
Yeah. I mean, you know, benefited the Ravens to have Clowney and Kyle Van Noy picked up in the middle of the season.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. If this defense gets lit up by Mac Jones, sorry, I clicked on the wrong one. Mac Jones 300 yard game. I don't know if it's going to be him or Bailey Zappi. Mac Jones has been benched each of the last like 3 weeks. But if this defense gives up 300 yards to either of the Patriots quarterbacks, we got some major problems.
I don't think that'll happen. This team will beat up on a bad Patriots offense.
I agree.
Mac Jones at 89 yards.
Yeah. That game next week might be like, again, like 13 to 10 or something like that.
Yeah, that's cursed. The game is cursed.
All right, Tyler, any final thoughts before we head out?
No, man. It's almost 10 o'clock. Thanksgiving break's over. Season's over. Day's over. So,
yeah. Back to school tomorrow for the both of us.
Yeah, which is I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to it much more than this game.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. All right, you guys, that's going to do it for us tonight. We appreciate all of you for tuning in. I honestly wasn't sure what to expect from tonight's turnout, but it's been a lot of fun. And the chat has been lively. The super chats has been very much appreciated. And we'll see what happens, man. We'll I might start watching some draft prospects this week. I don't know if I'll have time or not, but we'll see what happens. So we'll be on the Chargers channel on Wednesday. Please tune into that. You know, we obviously appreciate all the support over there. And then Tyler and I will have our regular shows on a regular schedule the rest of this week. I will not be going on a cruise this time around, so we'll be back to normal from here on out. All right, guys, appreciate you. Hope you have a great rest of your week. Hope you had a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.